And a good Tuesday morning to you. Welcome into the Nick Craig Show, streaming live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, X, and Facebook. Don't forget that you can take the show with you 24/7 on demand by checking out the Nick Craig Show in your favorite podcast app. You can also listen online by visiting the website nickcraig.com. Our show this morning is brought to you in part by The Law Group. Visit them online at lawgroupnc.com. More from them coming up a little bit later on in the program this morning. Well, there's obviously a lot going on in the news nationally, internationally, and in the state this morning, which is where we will begin and focus the majority of our coverage. A lot of national stuff going on. Trump making some big announcements over the last couple of days. We've got some very important statewide news to get into this morning as lawmakers were back in Raleigh yesterday dealing with a variety of matters. And one of the most important, the murder of Irina Zarusska. Now, this was a month ago yesterday, the 22nd of August, just 1 month ago. The 23-year-old Ukrainian refugee was heading home from her job, you know, unlike many others who come to America, assimilating into the culture, working, being a productive, useful member of society, was heading home from her job at a pizzeria that she works at in Charlotte when she was brutally murdered on the Charlotte light rail. An individual by the name of DeCarlos Brown Jr., a 34-year-old repeat offender, repeat criminal, individual who was well-known to law enforcement, well-known to the judicial and legal system throughout the Charlotte-Mecklenburg County area, for whatever reason, decided that he was going to pull a Swiss Army knife or a pocket knife out of his pocket and stab Irina 3 times in the neck and kill her on the Charlotte light rail. For what reason? We have absolutely no idea. For what reason? We will probably never know, because DeCarlos Brown Jr. is mentally unstable. He is a homeless individual who had been previously arrested 14 times for a litany of other issues, which I'll note some very serious: armed robbery, felony larceny, breaking and entering, shoplifting, earlier this year making a false report via the 911 system. This is an individual who was well known. This is an individual who should not have been let out and should not have been. And if this makes me an inhumane scumbag, then fine, attribute that to me. This is somebody that should not have been roaming around in our free society. I don't have any problem saying that. I don't have any shame saying that. Individuals that have proven that they are incapable of living or operating in society should not be in said society. DeCarlos Brown Jr., with his lengthy criminal rap sheet, his well-documented mental illness, should not have been riding the Charlotte light rail on the night of August the 22nd. He shouldn't have, but he was. In large part because of Democrat, weak, soft on crime policies that you see in most every major metropolitan city across the United States. This is unfortunately not a Charlotte issue. This is not a North Carolina issue. This is a national growing trend that Democrats are now having to answer for. In an attempt, and I made this point back a couple of weeks ago, in an attempt to be compassionate to the mentally ill, in an attempt to be compassionate to individuals who don't have their lives together, Democrats believe it is appropriate and proper to give these individuals consistent slaps on the wrists and just hope, just wish and pray that these individuals will change their lives, will change their actions, will change the things that they do. And while that might look good on paper, while you might be able to pump up your chest and talk about how great of a person you are because you're not wanting to hold this individual accountable because of dealing with mental illness or, oh, they grew up in poverty, so on and so forth, in an attempt to be compassionate, Irina Zarusska was murdered. In an attempt to be compassionate to a repeat violent mentally ill criminal, Irina Zaruska, a 23-year-old Ukrainian refugee, was murdered for no reason. That happened a month ago yesterday. In the past month, we, of course, have seen the surveillance video, talked about that in great detail here on the show. If you missed that, check out the podcast or the YouTube. Actually, that would be more of a watch than a listen. Check out the YouTube or Rumble feeds for the show. You can view the episodes in which we walk through the surveillance video. In that same span over the last month, we have seen national attention on this. Comments made by President Donald Trump back a couple of weeks ago about the situation that unfolded at the Charlotte light rail. And we've also seen lawmakers in Raleigh come together and say, enough is enough. We have seen lawmakers across our state, members of the General Assembly, saying, no, we're not going to do this anymore. We are not going to allow these longtime repeat offenders, these consistent criminals, to roam out and attempt to be part of our society. And I think lawmakers are absolutely spot on with that. I want to take you back before we get into some of the activities yesterday in Raleigh. I want to take you back to September the 11th, just back last week, when Destin Hall, and who's the Speaker of the North Carolina House, and Phil Berger Jr., who's the leader of the North Carolina Senate, held a press conference in Raleigh in which they previewed legislation that we would now know as Irina's Law that was introduced yesterday. So here's just a couple of clips from that situation back last week, a couple weeks ago.
Another tragic time in our country with the murder of Charlie Kirk yesterday, and for us here in North Carolina, coming on the heels of a tragedy on the Charlotte transit system recently with the murder of the Ukrainian refugee who was on the train that night. And so over the course of the past really couple of weeks, we at the General Assembly have been thinking about what we can do to prevent the tragedy that happened in Charlotte from ever happening again in this state. And so we're still in the homework stage, finding out how this specific case happened. But from what we can tell so far, this was largely as a result of somebody being released from a jail who should not have been released from a jail. An individual who had a violent history, a convicted felon, had multiple charges, clearly had mental health issues, had multiple interactions with Charlotte-Mecklenburg Police Department, and somehow was allowed to walk out of the jail by a magistrate by simply signing a written promise to appear. Again, when all those facts were known, or certainly should have been known at the time. And so we've got to get to the bottom of how it happened in this case, and we're looking at a number of possible legislative actions to take, reforming various issues with our magistrates, with pretrial conditions of release, which we'll talk about more in just a moment.
That's House Speaker Destin Hall back at the that September the 11th press conference in the General Assembly. Similar comments echoed by the leader of the North Carolina Senate in Phil Berger.
Irina Zaruska should still be alive today. But her life was tragically cut short because of the atrocious policies pushed by out-of-touch politicians and court officials that prioritize a perverted vision or version of equity and politicized social justice over real and tangible justice. The hardworking men and women in law enforcement go after and catch violent criminals. But all too often, as soon as the criminals are brought before a magistrate or a judge, their efforts to keep our communities safe go down the drain. We cannot stand by while our cities are held hostage by soft-on-crime policies. We must stop the ongoing violence from overtaking our state and our country.
The Senate leader is absolutely spot on there. It is this perverted attempt to be caring and compassionate to everybody. And here's the point. There's nothing wrong, and there's nothing evil about wanting to be compassionate. There's nothing wrong with society that is compassionate to individuals, especially those that might be down on their luck. especially those that might struggle with issues like mental health. But you have to be able to walk and chew gum at the same time. You can be compassionate to individuals that need some level of compassion, while at the same time not putting the general public at risk, while not putting law-abiding citizens who are doing everything right, who are minding their own business, who are trying to be useful and productive members of society, you cannot put them at risk in an attempt to be compassionate to the mentally ill. You cannot put them at risk in an attempt to provide equitable justice within the judicial system or whatever the hell that means. That is where Democrats, once again, have gone just a couple of steps too far. And this is unfortunately a tale as old as time. We see this in politics very frequently with those on the left side of the political aisle. They take something and they just run too far with it. And that's exactly what you've seen over the last decade or so. Really, a lot of it kicking off during the summer of peace and love in 2020, when Democrats encouraged their followers to riot, burn cities to the ground, attack cops, all because George Floyd, another criminal with fentanyl in his system, was at the time believed to have been murdered in cold blood by a cop. That kicked off, and even in North Carolina, a whole bunch of different task forces and a whole bunch of different groups to research justice in the equity system and carry out all of these phenomenal, great bleeding heart policies about how we deal with criminals, so on and so forth. These policies have been a freaking disaster since day one. You can be compassionate. I would argue that as a society, we are compassionate. Nonprofits throughout the United States receive hundreds of millions of dollars worth of funding from regular everyday people each and every year. Tens of thousands of nonprofits receive help, volunteers that are regular everyday people that live in their community, live in their city, their town, each and every single day. We as a society are compassionate. It's why people volunteer their time. It's why people write checks and provide resources to a litany of charity nonprofit groups across the United States. We are compassionate. But there has been this growing change to, in my opinion, stretch the definition of compassion to mean you just never hold anybody accountable for anything. To me, that is what the left has taken the word compassion and morphed it into. Regardless of who you are, what you've done, what your background is, what the track record is, none of that matters. We just are going to consistently say, well, we're going to be compassionate. We'll let you do whatever the hell you want. And that has led us to the period of time that we are right now, where in many major Democrat cities, that is the one unique, the one consistent factor in all of these major Democrat cities, which Charlotte and the larger, greater Mecklenburg County area is, have decided that it is no longer important to hold criminals responsible. And that is what has led us to Irina Zaruska's murder. That is what has led us to these cities falling into statuses of disrepair, complete and total lawlessness. Right? We see and have seen in recent weeks what happens in a city like Washington, D.C., both before and after you actually start enforcing the laws that are on the books. Before and after you start actually holding criminals accountable, holding people to the ordinances that exist, you see a major cleanup. You're not seeing people being murdered consistently. You're not seeing the dozens of carjackings that were taking place each and every day in Washington, D.C. Not because the laws have changed. Not because there's been any federal takeover of the D.C. government. No. You've got National Guard and the D.C. police enforcing the laws that are on the books. And when you enforce those laws, lo and behold, your city, your town, your community tends to be a safer place. This is not some grandiose academic exercise, folks. It is very analog. It is very clear and very easy to understand. If you enforce laws, the communities in which you're enforcing those laws tend to be safer. And we have reached, I think, a fever pitch in this country where you are seeing regular everyday voters, folks that are not overtly political, individuals that maybe don't even closely align with a political party. They're not Democrats. They're not Republicans. They're busy with their lives. They don't follow politics really at all. They may vote in a presidential election every couple of years. Maybe these are not overtly political people. They're not you. They're not me. They are coming to the realization. They are now, after years of watching this lawlessness take place, say, enough is enough. We've watched the experiments play out. We've let the Democrats try their compassion justice task forces all over the country, and the end result is law-abiding, useful, prominent members of society now have to deal with the repercussions, and it's just not acceptable. So Republicans in Raleigh are doing exactly what they should be doing because the government failed Irina Zaruska. Because the government, both the Charlotte City Council, the Mecklenburg County Sheriff, the Charlotte Police Chief and Johnny Jennings, the Charlotte Area Transit System and CATS, all of those government entities and people, Vi Lyles, have failed the citizens of Charlotte. They have failed the people in which they are tasked to represent and in large part keep safe. They have miserably failed. So now it is time for the adults. Now it is time for the North Carolina General Assembly to step into the room and clean up the disastrous policies of these places like Charlotte, like Mecklenburg County. So yesterday in the North Carolina Senate, you had Irina's Law, which is House Bill 307 for those keeping track at home. House Bill 307 was introduced. And it was first introduced in the Senate Judiciary Committee before it went through the process of making its way to the Senate floor last night. And I can read through some of the details, but I'm going to turn it over to Senator Danny Britt. He is a Republican member of the North Carolina Senate. He represents Hoke County. He did a really good job at explaining what exactly is in this legislation at the Senate Judiciary Committee meeting yesterday. Here's Senator Britt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. This bill is largely in response to the incident that happened in Mecklenburg County on the Charlotte Mass Transit System. And this is in House Bill 307, what has been called Irina's Law. What this deals with is pretrial release conditions under various certain circumstances. This creates, or basically does away with, written promises to appear. It creates a new concept of what would be considered a violent offense. In circumstances where there is a violent offense, there would be a rebuttable presumption that no pretrial release would be granted based on a danger analysis. If the judicial official does determine pretrial release is appropriate, the following would apply. The first arrest, the only option is either a secure bond or house arrest with monitoring. Second or subsequent only option is house arrest with monitoring. If a defendant has been convicted of three or more offenses, class one misdemeanor or higher, within 10 years prior to, then the only option is secured bond along with house arrest with monitoring. Many counties do not already have the GPS monitoring system within their pretrial release or their sheriff's department. This would allow for individuals to our counties who do not have those systems established to contract with a private vendor by which the defender would pay for that ankle monitoring device if they were placed out on pretrial release with a monitor. Law is clarified to ensure that judicial official reviews and considers defendant's criminal history before setting conditions of pretrial release. Law is modified so that judicial official must make written findings of fact explaining the reasons why the official determined the conditions of release in each case. If a judge or magistrate fails to make these written findings, it would be ground for suspension. It would allow the Chief Justice, Supreme Court, or Chief District Court Judge to initiate suspension proceedings for magistrates. Right now, only a Chief District Court Judge could suspend. As for mental health evaluations, it creates a protocol under which judicial official will be required to order a mental health evaluation if the defendant is charged with a violent offense and has been involuntarily committed within the last 3 years, or the defendant is charged with any offense and judicial official has cause to believe the defendant is suffering from a mental health crisis. The collaboratory will study the intersection of mental health and the justice system in North Carolina. As we all realize that there is a connection. There's more to do on this topic. We had a rather short window to do what we did in this bill here. We believe this does make North Carolina safer and does help to promote law and order in the state of North Carolina, but we do have more work to do on involuntary commitments and mental health in the space of the criminal justice system. This also would modify laws related to aggravating factors when someone is on trial for first-degree murder prior to a decision that the state is going to proceed capital. One of the arguments they must make to the court are that certain aggravating factors exist to be able to have the case declared capital. This adds an aggravating factor that if the incident took place on mass transit, that would be considered an aggravating factor by which Rule 24 could be granted. It also modifies death penalty proceedings that appeals and post-convictions, MARs, must be heard within 24 months of the date they have been filed. The oldest appeal currently is a 1985 murder case in the state of North Carolina. And these murder appeals are simply going on too long without a family ever seeing justice for their loved one. And this is an effort to try to speed these up. Any case that is already pending appeal, if appeal has already been filed, they'll have 24 months as well from passage of this law. There was a modification in what was in the original draft that we made. Current law requires the defendant's lack of capacity to proceed. The court dismissed charges. This occurs at any time a defendant will not regain capacity. The defendant has been incarcerated beyond maximum sentence for the underlying sentence or 10 years for any felony. Essentially, if someone's declared incompetent, the longest we can hold them, if they are violent, is up to 10 years. This provides a process for after that 10-year period, the district attorney can have the individual viewed again to determine whether or not further involuntary commitment is necessary.
That's Senator Danny Britt in the Senate Judiciary Committee yesterday, introducing and reading through and going through essentially line by line, page by page of House Bill 307. That is Irina's Law, which is in a direct response to her murder on the Charlotte light rail back on August the 22nd. And this is a great piece of legislation. It is unfortunate that we're at this position. It's unfortunate that lawmakers have to go back to Raleigh to pass a law to hold magistrates and judges accountable for a job that they should already be doing. But fortunately, here in North Carolina, Republicans do have control of the General Assembly. It's an unfortunate situation from many different angles and many different standpoints, but fortunately we have some recourse, right? In many other states, for example, if the General Assembly was currently controlled by Democrats, you would not be seeing anything like this at all. And so as you look through some of the details, this creates a new category of violent offenses, and those individuals would be required to have GPS monitoring, house arrest, secured bond for those accused, and for those violent offenses. So this idea of you being a violent criminal and getting arrested, being charged, and then some left-wing magistrate or some left-wing judge saying, well, you know, we'll just have you write this sign on this dotted line here, this piece of paper that says you're not going to be a criminal anymore and you're going to come back, and we'll just let you go out, pretrial release, no issue at all. Those days are over if this legislation goes through. But again, we shouldn't be in this position. You would assume, and again, you know what they say about assumptions, but you would assume that magistrates, you would assume that judges would know better than to allow individuals with a lengthy criminal rap sheet, allow individuals with that have turned into essentially, and I know there's a legal term for it, but or there's a legal definition for it, but what I would describe as habitual criminals to repeat crimes over and over again and consistently be released. At a certain point, you would say, assume that that would stop, that somebody in the room would say, DeCarlos Brown Jr., 14-time convicted criminal, armed robbery, breaking and entering, severe mental illness. Maybe we should do something with this guy. Maybe. Somebody would have said that, but apparently not. Or if anybody said it, it wasn't taken with any sort of serious nature at all. And so now you've got lawmakers in Raleigh introducing House Bill 307. One of the other things in this, and this caused some major controversy in the General Assembly, specifically the North Carolina Senate late last night, was discussions about capital punishment. And so the death penalty is legal in North Carolina. It has been on the books. It is in a, we do have capital punishment in our state. But for about the last 20 years, there have been ongoing lawsuits with groups like the ACLU and other left-wing groups that have completely bogged down the death penalty here in the state of North Carolina, where to the point where nobody has been executed in 20 years. So that litigation has continued. There is a current process set up with where you can appeal a decision on the death penalty. And it that appeal essentially can stay open indefinitely. So you appeal it, the decision stays open indefinitely, and somebody on death row never has to face the crime in the charge in which they were convicted of. It just, it never happens. Another part of this legislation is the Racial Justice Act. Some of these task forces and groups that were set up after the George Floyd killing and have directed the Attorney General's office, have provided research and studies to the General Assembly saying, oh, we have to be compassionate. Oh, we can't hold criminals accountable. Oh, it's racist if you want to charge people with crimes. Just the typical garbage, just the typical nonsense that you would expect. Lawmakers in Raleigh are putting their foot down and they're saying, no, again, you guys have had your opportunity to prove that this stuff works. And this is where I stand. And I didn't hear this from anybody, but this is my stance on it. Pretty clean cut and dry. Democrats have had years now to prove that these justice acts, these task forces and all of these recommendations, they've had years to prove that this stuff is beneficial and will work for a society. They've had the opportunity to do so. And the reality is one that is very simple. You are not seeing anything beneficial come out of these task forces. You're not seeing anything beneficial coming out of these racial justice acts, so on and so forth. You're just not, nothing, except for communities being less safe. And myself, I would imagine most of you, and I think I would even say the vast majority of the voting public in North Carolina is fed up and has just had enough. So we'll get into some more details on House Bill 307, IRENA's law. We'll walk you through what went on in the North Carolina Senate last night. They were there well past 7 p.m. working out some of the details on this legislation. We'll get into all of those details as the show rolls on this Tuesday morning. But before that, it is not possible. This show is not possible without the great support from our advertisers, which include Melissa Gott and the Law Group right here in Wilmington. When legal challenges arise, trust the Law Group. For now 22 years, their experienced attorneys have provided high-quality, affordable legal services across our state, and more predominantly Eastern North Carolina. Whether you're facing a divorce, maybe you're looking at purchasing a home, a secondary home, a rental property, any sort of real estate transaction, the Law Group has your back. Their dedicated team ensures your questions are answered and issues are resolved as quickly as possible. Great news, folks. They're located in downtown Wilmington and just a phone call away at 910-251-6088. Or you can visit them online at lawgroupnc.com, a great website where you can meet all of their attorneys, learn about them and their backgrounds, view all the areas of practice, and a great blog that discusses a variety of legal challenges and issues that you could be dealing with. All of that available at lawgroupnc.com. Give them a call, 910-251-6088, or visit their website, The Law Group, experience and dedication you can rely on. We appreciate The Law Group and their continued support of The Nick Craig Show. We'll get into more out of the General Assembly, plus your feedback and comments as well, as The Nick Craig Show rolls on live on a Tuesday morning, streaming on YouTube, Rumble, X, Facebook, and available 24/7 wherever you get your podcasts. Good Tuesday morning to you. Welcome back to The Nick Craig Show. Thanks for spending some time with us as we continue our discussion on what's going on in the North Carolina General Assembly. The North Carolina Senate in Raleigh yesterday introducing and working through some of the details of House Bill 307. This is being called Irina's Law, and it is a direct response to the murder of Irina Zaruska, a 23-year-old Ukrainian refugee who was murdered back on the Charlotte light rail back on August the 22nd. And lawmakers in Raleigh, because of these soft, weak-on-crime policies in Democrat-controlled cities, are having to take action in Raleigh. Looking at some of the comments coming in on our live chats this morning over on Rumble, none of the Dem City Council candidates are for ICE. They're pushing more police accountability rather than more staffing. Pro-criminal versus pro-victim, we are not alike. And this is a growing trend. Whether you're talking about ICE and federal law enforcement operations that are ongoing in U.S. cities, getting violent, dangerous criminals who aren't even supposed to be here in the first place out of the country, or you're talking about repeat offenders like DeCarlos Brown Jr., who should have never been on the streets. And that's just not my take on it. His own freaking mother, in speaking after the murder of Zaruska, Irina Zaruska, even his own mother said, oh, he shouldn't have been out. So if his own mother says he shouldn't be out on the streets, if his own mother says that he should not be assimilating with society, don't you think that might be a wake-up call? Don't you think that's the case? His mother told the New York Post, a direct quote, he shouldn't have been released. This is in response to him being free on a written promise to appear for a court date after his latest arrest in January. His mother said that she had taken her son to a homeless shelter just days before the barbaric attack on the 23-year-old on the Charlotte light rail, and that he had grown increasingly aggressive with both her and her husband. So if his own mother is saying that, don't you think maybe somebody in the judicial system, somebody, a magistrate, a judge, somebody in Charlotte, in Mecklenburg County, should have done something different? I don't know. Maybe I guess that's just too radical of an idea. So now lawmakers in Raleigh, the adults in the room, the Republicans leading the General Assembly, are having to take action because we have seen these Democrat policies play out in front of everybody. We've all seen the videos, unfortunately. We've all seen the pictures, unfortunately, of Irina Zaruska getting murdered in cold blood for doing nothing wrong besides heading home from work, which I guess now is just as heading home from work might as well just be a death sentence if you live in Charlotte. We've seen and watched these Democrat policies play out. They don't freaking work. And now it's time for the adults in the room to come in and attempt to rectify these situations. None of it is going to bring Irina back to life. None of it is going to bring solace to her family, her boyfriend. But it is beyond time that we call out this garbage for what it is, call out these disastrous policies for what they are, and say, we're done. We're not going to sit here and pander and pretend that this stuff has any sustainable place in our society. It doesn't. If the video, if the pictures, if the murder of Irina Zaruska is not enough for you to say these policies don't work, then you deserve to be in no decision-making roles at all. Plain and simple. The Charlotte City Council is getting hammered on this. Mayor Vi Lyles, who is a complete moron and has completely mishandled this situation, continues to get hammered in Charlotte, rightfully so. There was a city council meeting last night in which the public spoke very clearly against what's going on in Charlotte. The light rail system where Zaruska was murdered doesn't have people checking tickets. There is very little, if any, armed security at all. It is a rolling homeless camp because officials in the city of Charlotte want to be compassionate to criminals. They want to be compassionate to violent offenders. So in being compassionate to those individuals, a 23-year-old Ukrainian refugee had to lose her life. That's the unfortunate reality of these decisions. That is the unfortunate reality of these sorts of policies. So in a vote late last night in the North Carolina Senate, 28-8, Irina's law passed. Now you might say that's an odd number. There's more than, 36 members in the North Carolina Senate. You're accurate. You would be absolutely correct with that assumption. There are more than 36 members in the North Carolina Senate. The vast majority of Democrats walked out of the Senate chamber before the final vote last night because they are cowards and cannot face the music of their own insane policies. They are unwilling to face the monster that they have created with their soft-on-crime policies. It makes no sense. It's not logical, and they are unwilling to face the music. And it gets even worse. I put this out on my X account yesterday. It's received a little bit of some publicity. A Democrat senator out of Mecklenburg County, Senator Muhammad, who is the senator for Charlotte, introduced an amendment to Irina's law that prohibits the use of a deceased crime victim's name, image, or likeness in political advertising. This is the definition of being so afraid of the things that you have done, being so unwilling to accept the responsibility for your actions. So this is what Democrat lawmakers in Charlotte are doing. So let's just read directly from the amendment introduced by Senator Muhammad. I'm going to read just a couple lines of it, line by line, so you can just go to see where these people are at. So this is the amendment. Prohibition of use of a deceased crime victim's name, image, or likeness in political advertising. And it describes all of the situations that exist and says, name, image, or likeness, any written, visual, or auditory attribute of a deceased crime victim that serves to identify that victim to an ordinary, reasonable reader, viewer, or listener, regardless of the medium that captures the attribute. Saying that nobody in the North Carolina General Assembly, nobody running for political office in North Carolina, should have the ability to mention the name of Irina Zaruska. Nobody running for political office should be allowed to mention her name, show the publicly available images provided by CATS, the Charlotte Area Transportation System, which is, by the way, public record because it is a taxpayer-funded system. nobody running for political office should be able to use anything and mention her name or anything about her in any sort of political advertising. And the justification for it was, oh, well, it's already been hard enough on her family, and you know, there's just no reason to continue to talk about her. No, there absolutely is a reason to continue to talk about her. There absolutely is a reason to talk about her. Democrats need to own their failed policies. Democrats need to own their disastrous decisions. This attempt, which I would argue is not even constitutional, but this attempt by Senator Muhammad out of Charlotte and Mecklenburg County to try and bar anybody in North Carolina that is running for political office from using Irina Zaruska's name is such a piss poor attempt at admonishing who is actually responsible for this. And a great comment coming in on our Rumble live chat. You've heard me say it a bunch of times. Time and time again, Dems prove they're incapable of accepting responsibilities for their actions. You've heard me say it 1,000 times. And it all comes back to their inability to just look in the mirror. Just have any sort of self-reflection on the things that they do, and the things that they support, the policies that they're in support of. They're unwilling to do it. At this point in time, I would argue they're incapable of doing it. Irina Zaruska was murdered because a dangerous repeat offender criminal was released time and time again by left-wing magistrates and left-wing judges in Charlotte, Mecklenburg. Plain and simple. There's no other explanation for it. None. Zero. Absolutely zero explanation other than that. And so now I've got to sit and listen to Senator Muhammad say, oh, well, you're not allowed to talk about her. You're not allowed to use her name. Why? Why shouldn't we be allowed to use her name? Because you don't want Republican candidates across the state of North Carolina highlighting your awful, disastrous, terrible policies that led to her murder? That's it. It's got nothing to do with the family. It's got nothing to do with protecting the victim. If Democrats gave a damn about protecting the victim, DeCarlos Brown Jr. wouldn't have been on the streets. If Democrats cared about their cities, their towns, the communities in which they serve, somebody like DeCarlos Brown Jr. wouldn't have been out. He would not have been riding the light rail on August the 22nd, I'll note, without a ticket. But Democrats don't care. They continually prove they don't care. And then I've got to listen to them lecture Republicans in the General Assembly about how it's inhumane to use Irina Zaruska's name. I would argue it's inhumane to allow her to be murdered by a 14-time convicted repeat offender criminal. I would argue that's, for me, a bridge too far. But it wasn't too far for the magistrate in Charlotte. Wasn't too far for the Charlotte City Council, wasn't too far for the Mecklenburg County commissioners who have allowed these policies to proliferate in their communities. And so, as you can imagine, this ridiculously stupid amendment by Senator Muhammad was voted down by the General Assembly, by the Senate, I should say, more accurately. It was completely blown out vote-wise, as it should have been, in a last-minute attempt to try and provide some cover to Democrats and their failed policies. Because even after this young woman was murdered, they still, I guess, cannot draw the correlation between the things that they support, the things that they have done, and the immediate implications, the immediate impacts of those policies. Very, very unfortunate. So after a vast majority of the Democrats walked out of the Senate because, God forbid, they supported anything that was not soft on crime, it passed 28-8. Now, looking this morning at the North Carolina General Assembly calendar, the House is set to reconvene around 10 o'clock this morning. And I'll note by looking at the dashboard here from the North Carolina General Assembly. This is on for discussion. Now, it's not immediately clear if it will be taken up today or how quickly, but IRENA's law is on the House calendar today. Lawmakers are set to be back again around 10 o'clock this morning. There's that is on the scheduled calendar for today, so we likely would see could see some movement on it. But the reality is very simple. This will pass the House where Republicans have a majority, and Democrat Governor Josh Stein will likely veto it. And that's going to be a real problem for him. It's one thing to have senators vote against it. It's going to be one thing to have people like Deb Butler vote against it in the House today if it comes up for a vote. It's going to be very different for Democrat Governor Josh Stein to veto this legislation and have to own it. And of course, he'll pull the same card that Democrats pulled after 7 p.m. last night about how the death penalty is so inhumane and, oh my God, we're bringing back capital punishment and, oh, it's not the Christian thing to do, getting lectured by a bunch of radical, out-of-control liberals about Christianity and what is Christian and what is not. It's absurd. It's completely ridiculous. And I think the vast majority of North Carolina voters understand what's going on here. They're capable of wrapping their head around the situation that they're watching unfold in front of their very eyes, and they just say, enough. We're done. You guys have had your shot. You've had your opportunity to prove that these things can work, and they just don't. Plain and simple. They don't work. And so now the adults in the room, aka the Republicans, have to come back once again and clean up the Democrats' mess. So that's what we're going to see potentially in the House later on today. Stay tuned for those that are social media users. If you have an account on X, you can follow me over there at Nicholas M. Craig. I'll be keeping you up to date with what goes on throughout the day at the General Assembly. And then, of course, I'll have details. I'm sure we'll get plenty of grandstanding from Democrats in the General Assembly. I'll have all those audio and video clips coming up for you tomorrow morning as we watch this legislation continue to move forward. With that, some pretty big national news that has a North Carolina connection. Vice President J.D. Vance is expected to visit the Charlotte metro area tomorrow to talk about public safety. According to sources familiar with the visit, Vance is planning to speak in Concord tomorrow on Wednesday, and he is expected to have his talk center on public safety and provisions in the One Big Beautiful Bill. As you can imagine, the IRENA Zaruska situation will come up. It will be discussed by Vance, and it will bring more light, as it should, onto these policies out of major cities like Charlotte, like Raleigh, like Asheville, like Greensboro, these major cities that are almost 100% of the time exclusively controlled and run by Democrats and have decided that it is more important to be compassionate to criminals. It is more important to be compassionate to the mentally ill than it is to protect their law-abiding citizens. That is what Democrats have decided is their priority. It's an unfortunate situation. We all could have predicted that we would get here. You didn't have to step too far to see the potential outcome for this, but here we are. So that's going to be happening tomorrow as well. I'll be keeping an eye on that Wednesday, and we'll have that coverage later on in the week as well. A couple of quick things before we get out of here this morning. The Atlantic hurricane season in the tropics, they are definitely warming up. You've got a major storm in Hurricane Gabriel that is currently heading west, so no impacts to the United States on that, but you've got these two other areas that the National Hurricane Center is watching. One of them has a 60% chance of development in the next 7 days. The other, a 90% chance of development in the next 7 days. Fortunately, the East Coast has been pretty lucky thus far this year in dealing with tropical weather and hurricanes. We are in just a couple of days going to be hitting the one-year mark of Hurricane Helene, but the tropics are heating up once we get some more guidance from the weather forecasting models. We'll keep you up to date if there looks like there's going to be any impact here across the East Coast, predominantly here southeastern North Carolina. We'll keep our eye on those details. Another thing that I'll be watching coming up tonight, the City Council is set to meet again. They've got their regularly scheduled meeting that is coming up tonight. The City Council will be dealing with that public camping ordinance again. There are discussions of a social district in the Brooklyn Arts District. That will be happening tonight as well. So we'll have a jam-packed Wednesday edition of the show coming up for you, keeping an eye on what's going on nationally, what's happening in Raleigh, and of course, what's happening with our local government here across southeastern North Carolina. Donald Trump heading to the UN in New York City today. A busy couple of news days, and we'll keep you up to date with all the details right here on the Nick Craig Show. If you believe that you are getting some beneficial content out of the show and you want some bonus access, including daily show notes and our monthly hangout, which will be happening next Tuesday night, you can head on over to patreon.com/Nick Craig and support the show financially. $5, $10 a month. You can also set a custom amount on that. You can support the show financially, get access to those daily show notes and our monthly hangout. All of that available over at patreon.com/Nick Craig. Well, that's going to do it for a Tuesday edition. Thanks to the Law Group here in Wilmington for their continued support. Visit them online at lawgroupnc.com. We'll be keeping an eye on a very busy Tuesday across the news sector and have all those details tomorrow morning, 7 a.m., streaming live, YouTube, Rumble, X, and Facebook, and of course, 24/7 wherever you get your podcasts. You've been listening to The Nick Craig Show.